and we embodied that Minnesota Nice Everywhere. We were a great opening band because we were punctual. We were nice guys. We were nice people. But, you know, we didn't really, a lot of times you don't really hang with the big band.
Sure.
Goo Goo Dolls are nice. They actually acknowledged us. But I got to say, it's Cheap Trick.
And off we go.
And off we go. Greetings and welcome to the Kindness Chronicles, where we hope to inject the world with a dose of Minnesota Nice that it seems to desperately need.
I'm John Schweitz, and my co-host here, Kevin Gorg. You might know him from Fox Sports North, Canterbury Park, and a Culver's drive-through near you.
Double Butterburger with mushrooms, and step on it, please.
We are joined today by an old pal of mine, Steve Brown, who provided our intro music. Steve, welcome.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Yep. Steve was, as many of you know, the lead singer for Johnny Clueless, a band that really hit its peak in the 90s, probably.
Yeah. Yep.
What a great decade of music, though. Honestly, that was a fun decade. Are you kidding me?
So, full disclosure, Steve and I went to high school together. He was a couple of years behind me. But when I was a senior...
And let's establish that you guys were pioneers.
We were pioneers.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, when I was a senior, all of the senior girls decided to be interested in the sophomore boys. So I've kind of held a grudge against Steve and his his classmates.
Well, Billy Idol had a 90s hit called Rock in the Cradle of Love. They were ahead of their time.
They were. They really were. All the high school cheerleaders were dating the sophomore boys. You know who you are.
And wow. I just remember your cheerleaders in 85 because I'm older than you are. And having them on WCCO TV during the state tournament with the makeup and then seeing the tears when Burnsville, yes, God's country, finally proved victorious, the makeup got to be a little messy.
It is interesting how you always want to bring up the 85 Burnsville hockey team.
Hill Murray gets the best of us many times, but not that
in
85. Time.
And who was the goaltender in 85?
Some Butterburger guy, I don't know.
Well, Steve, enough about Captain Butterburger.
All right. There.
When I originally reached out to you, you are one of those guys that just has always been such a delightful person. I remember you in high school as one of those people that really seemed to, you know, weren't really clicky. You were friends with all kinds of different people. And I consider you sort of the embodiment of the kindness that we're hoping we can impart upon people. But you also have kind of a fun story.
Thank you, John. That's very nice of you. And yes, I'm a nice Minnesota guy. And I played in a band and formed a band and traveled around the country. And we embodied that Minnesota Nice Everywhere. We couldn't really shake it. And people knew who we were right away. Wherever we traveled, they would recognize our accent or we would ask for a pop.
You get
a pop. And they
see, there's soda or pop. And around here, it's pop.
Yeah. So we changed that because we didn't want people to immediately know who we were. It's like, you know, you give yourself away. So yes, we took it seriously. I mean, we really traveled and we opened up for lots of bands. We really hit it hard, put out albums, and we took it seriously. And it wasn't just like a party on the road. It was, we were trying to really do something. We were the most punctual, sad, you know, we'd show up on time, ready to do our job. You know, we were very good at what we did. We had fun, but it was a serious thing.
Obviously, the Minnesota Nice that you embody is something that came from somewhere. Tell us a little bit about your background, where you grew up.
I grew up in Monomedi, which is where I live
now.
The meat pie.
Yes. That's right. I went to St. Jude's across
God
the street
bless
from you.
My son.
Oh, brother.
So, yeah. So we grew up kind of out a little bit outside of Monomedi, but in the country. That was a small town. Good parents, good people, good family, good brothers and sisters. I realized right away being nice gets you a lot further. And I was not smart enough to be a good liar. So I can't forget, because once you start that road, you got to know where your lies.
It's a slippery slope.
Yeah. So it kind of kept me on track. Like, I'm not smart enough to do that. You know, just be good to people.
You thinking of George Costanza?
Right. Yes.
Now? It's only a lie.
Yep. If you don't believe it.
It's a trap. You got to keep going with it. And I'm not good at that. So,
but you have a brother, Dan, who I graduated with, who was also a delightful fellow. Yep. Do you have any other siblings?
I have two brothers and two sisters, five kids in my family.
Holy cow.
My oldest brother, Tony, went to Hill Murray as well, graduated in 81. My sister, Lisa, graduated in 82. And then Dan, 86 with you, right?
Yes.
Yeah. And then I graduated in 88. My younger sister, Shannon, went to Monomedi, actually.
She broke the mold.
She broke it, yeah.
Wow.
I don't really know why. She had friends, and she was like,
right. She still turned out okay?
She turned out
just fine. She made it.
Very nice.
Yeah.
I remember you as a drummer in high school.
Yes.
You know, that the ladies always seemed to be enamored with.
Well, I was always kind of a performer as a kid. I think it's because of where I was in the family. I think I was looking for attention out of the four. It was three of them already. And, you know, I was like, I think I came around and wanted some attention. And I got it by entertaining. I was going to make my mom laugh and entertain. So I became an Elvis impersonator.
Oh, my God.
Oh, that's sweet.
My mom sprayed my hair black, put some glutes and sideburns on, sewed me this amazing Elvis costume. And the reason why she actually made it is because one of their friends had a 40th birthday party. And my parents and their friends did the 40th birthday party. It's huge. They just went all out. And they would have meetings and plan a whole thing and have these great surprise parties with these people. This one friend of theirs, her name is Pat Branch, and she was a huge Elvis fan. And they said, it'd be great if we could have an Elvis impersonator. And I'm around the house in the mirror doing Elvis all the time. I wasn't even a singer. I just thought he was just the coolest dude. I actually saw him play when I was 5 years old at the Met Stadium.
Oh, nice.
Yep, 1976, 75, 76, somewhere in there. I was 5 or 6 years old. Anyway, I fell asleep. It was way too much for me.
But still, there was some influence.
Yeah, a lot of influence. I was into it. Anyway, I was always sort of performing back to my neighborhood. We started playing music and I moved from BMX biking to like making guitars and writing songs instead of doing cover songs. We were about like, I had one friend, my friend Steven was like just a really smart, creative guy. He was like, let's write a song. Like, you can't write a song. You got to, you know, and he just opened me up to that. After that, that's what we wanted to do. We spent time performing and writing songs and playing in bands. And the only reason why I became a drummer, so I love guitar. I always play guitar. I was the only guy in the band that had a job and had the rhythm to do it. So,
very nice.
So they decided, okay, you're going to be the drummer.
You're the drummer.
Yeah. So I was a very rudimentary drummer, but I figured it out. And I actually went on to continue to play even after those neighborhood bands ended. I played drums with a band called the Urban Gorillas.
Oh, really?
So they were a big band in the 80s in Minneapolis, kind of a punk kind of band. They broke up and reformed and I had some friends that knew some of them. I was 16 years old playing at the 7th Street Entry and the Caboose.
No kidding.
Are you serious? Yeah. That's awesome.
So I've been in, I wasn't good. Let me just.
You're 16 at the Caboose. That's not bad. Yeah.
So I was very kind of foreshadowing to where my life went in my 20s. Like that was my home, the Caboose. So it was very exciting to be able to do it. My parents were pretty cool with it. It was just like a weekend, got to do some shows. We did go to on the road one weekend. We went to Moorhead and played at Kirby's, which is another place that my band, Johnny Clueless, played there a million times and became my home. So strange early life for music. And
was the Rummage Kinsman, okay. Is that part of yeah. your that's
so,
part of
so
your
I'm
history?
Going in chronological order here.
Okay.
Some of my high school friends from Montemita. I was friends with people in Montemita and Hill Murray because I played summer soccer. Well,
you're friends with everybody.
Yeah, exactly.
You're Steve Brown.
Mad about town.
Nice guy. Just too nice. Played soccer with some friends,
too.
Jay Matthews and Dave Leach, some guys that I knew. They were like, hey,
Dave Leach, Andy Leach's brother.
Yes.
Oh Lord.
Yes. He's still a good friend of mine. Sadly we lost my friend Jay.
I know.
Jay Matthews. But we formed a band. After Urban Girls, like, dude, let's get some, we all like the same music. They said, let's get a band together. So I started like formally playing the drums with them. And also writing songs. So I wrote songs and that would be my platform and Jay would sing them and we'd play them. And so I ended up being the drummer for that band, which we had a good run in high school. We had t-shirts.
So how old are you when you get your first band t-shirt? How are you still in high school?
Yes. 87. Rummage Kinsman.
How cool are you walking around the halls of Hill Murray being in a band with
nobody
their
wears
own
the t-shirt. Hey, wait a minute. From yeah, their
we
own
have to wear
band.
A uniform.
I'm sorry. Under my uniform, I'm wearing that t-shirt. And at some point I'm making a point to tell people, this is my band.
No, it was a well-designed shirt and it sold like crazy. We had all kinds of friends.
Well-designed.
You know, they loved it. And it was super fun.
And you have occasionally gotten back together again because you have like some fundraising events up at the Dugout.
Yep. Yep.
In downtown Matamita.
Oh, I've been to the Dugout.
Which is sort of like the 50th in France of Willerney, Minnesota.
Again, it was like the focus is on original music. We did a lot of covers to fill out a whole night, but we wrote songs and they were turned on to that idea. And so I from my neighborhood to now in my high school band, we were actually writing songs, and no one was really doing that with any kind of, they weren't like fantastic songs, but they were.
They were yours.
They were danceable. And the whole point is to have fun. Get people out dancing.
Get them out on the dance floor. Get them having some fun.
That's totally. That's, it's always been about that. I'm performing and like having a good time. People, getting people out there and getting together. So I miss it right now.
So who else was in that band? Just curiously.
Dave Leach, Jay Matthews, Josh Knudsen, who's a good friend. He graduated from Monomita and he moved out. He lives out west. He lives in Seattle. And then Kelly Ryan played the keyboards. We lost him too. He died, in the 90s. So, super sad. We lost two of those guys. Wow. And we're not
in the 90s, man. He had to be young.
He had a brain tumor and
yeah, oh, it's awful.
It was all, we were all in college and it kind of happened so fast.
Cause keyboards, I look back at the '80s and nineties, I think of A Flock of Seagulls and some of the concerts that I went to, and the keyboards were a big part of the show, right? You always had the keyboard person right on the front right of the stage. And it was, there was a lot of techno to it. It was fantastic.
Oh yeah.
Journey had the
guy. Keyboardist. Absolutely.
So tell us about your time with Johnny Clueless. That was kind of when you hit it the big time.
Yeah. So I moved into college with this idea. I was going to change from being the drummer because I didn't want to pack up my drums and go to college with a drum set. And the world does not need another half-ass drummer. I was a half-ass drummer. I loved it, but I had rhythm, but I was still writing songs. And so I was like, when I go to college, went to St. Cloud State, by the way.
Go Huskies.
I was so excited to do that. And I was like, I'm gonna kind of keep my eye out for some people that might need a band. I'm going to help them out. Jumping in as a rhythm guitar player for a band. Had a singer. They had a whole thing. And because of my neighborhood, we were very much like, it was an open, there was no... very creative environment. So there was like, oh no, that sucks. Let's do this. You just are open like that. So when I sat there with this band, the singer was doing something and someone said, you got a song. And so I got a song and I ended up singing it. And this, I sang it. It's called I Want a Girl. One of my
earliest. Oh yeah. This is on YouTube. You can see it on YouTube.
Yeah, exactly. And, I played it and the whole band was like, this is great. This is an original song. And the singer never came back.
And you're the singer.
I know. Wow. I guess you're the singer. And I'm like, great. So,
kind of like Lou Gehrig and Wally Pipp.
Yes. See? You know, it's the same thing, Lou just Gehrig, different.
The Lou Gehrig of Minnesota music.
Yeah. How about that? And we had no idea when we started this podcast.
Exactly. The connections are.
And now we know incredible. The rest of the story. That's cool.
So,
and that was an early formation of Johnny Clueless called Tomfoolery. We played all the college parties. We were not able to be in the bar yet. And that kind of fizzled out. We wrote a lot of songs during that time and built a great bar or a party house kind of crowd.
Oh, fun.
And we put out a tape as well. Back again, another tape. You know, you get those tapes going.
Oh, yeah.
And we created a nice little audience. So every time I came back the next fall, there's more people that are into it. And by the time sort of that kind of ended out, I was like, okay, I'm going to start a real band. I'm going to do this right. I'm going to really try to find people that are serious about it. So I got my old drummer who I really formed something great with. And then I found some new people and, Stacy Machula on bass. She was, I went to the music store in town in St. Cloud and I said, you know anyone that plays bass? And
no kidding.
Guy, and yeah, it's at this simple. And the guy goes, well, actually Stacy, she comes in here all the time. She's great. She can sing and everything. And I'm like, a female bass player. That's pretty cool. Very,
very
Smashing Pumpkins.
Yeah. Like, very 90s. Yeah. Oh.
So I literally went home. Called her up. She lived in a dorm not far from me. I said, I'm starting a new band. Someone, you know, from the music store gave me your number. And she came over immediately. We sat down and started working it out. So
that's awesome.
Yeah. So it was that simple. And that was 1992.
Wow.
And we had a couple different guitar players. The guitar player I play with now, we've known him since early 2000. And he's a fantastic, amazing producer. He plays everything. And, But we traveled, and from that point, from 92, we did a lot of St. Cloud State shows and built ourselves up at the red carpet, and then we started traveling. Graduated from school and traveled all through the 20s.
Did you have folks that would show up at a lot of the different shows? I want to say regulars, fans, that I don't want to call them groupies, because that term gets kind of into the muddy waters like and so forth, but you know what I'm talking about. Folks that just loved your band, and no matter where you were, if it was close enough to drive, off they went?
Yep, we did. We had... So what really built us in Minneapolis is started playing the Caboose every Wednesday in the summer.
Oh, that's huge.
And built our crowd up by that fall. Oh. It was an amazing crowd. So we were a very energetic band. We kind of had something fresh going. And like you said earlier, the 90s were a great time for original music.
Yep.
The grunge scene was in. We were in a grunge band, but it was about original, something new, something different. all the cheesy 80s stuff. Kind of
people were kind of ready for something completely different from what they had. And the 80s was a lot of fun, but it was overdone. Yep. And when the 90s came around, to your point, people were starving for something different.
Yep, yep. So we brought something fresh and new. It was some of that original thinking from my neighborhood, like write a song. And, you know, they weren't great songs, but we kept crafting them and kept working on them and you know, ended up putting out albums and recording in real studios. And it surpassed, John, all I really wanted to do was play the red carpet at St. Cloud.
Mission accomplished.
Oh, I love it.
Having such success at the party houses was packed. And I was like, I just want to play the red carpet. I want to have a good crowd there. And the first weekend we played there, we played upstairs. So they gave us like the small venue, and then some other cheesy band played downstairs. I shouldn't say that. They were like a cover band.
We'll edit that out.
And yeah, they were nice guys, but they, the bar, we played for a whole weekend and we packed that entire space so bad. There was no one downstairs in the main room.
They should have flipped it.
By the end of the night, I was, you know, on top of the tables, you know, we were just entertaining the crap out of these people because they all knew all the songs already. So it exploded.
Because the 21 people from the party house were all at the red carpet.
The bar, so the bar was like, whoa, and they made a lot of money on us.
That's great.
And then same thing happened in Minneapolis. We built a crowd there. And then by the time all those people graduated, it's all timing for my band. It exploded into this great thing. And the bar scene was really good back then. So we had 1,000 people at the Caboose every time we played for many years there.
What fun.
It was great.
And then
I can't complain.
You went on the road, didn't you?
We hit the road and did almost 180 shows a year for a few years there. So we went through 3 different vans. We pulled a trailer along. So we didn't bring PA gear. We just played in clubs that had PA systems. But you bring your amps and your gear, and it was a very arduous.
It's a lot of work, right? I mean, that's 180. That's a long grind.
What was the biggest crowd you ever?
I would say one of the biggest crowds we ever played to was about 60,000 people for the Aquatennial thing with Cheap Trick. We opened up for Cheap Trick.
No.
That's cool.
Minneapolis, where Blocky used to be. Before they built the Blocky, there was a big, huge lot there. Before they had before they started building, they had a big party, and the whole city was, you know, packed full of people. And that was, at a time, a culmination of we had played a month of shows with Cheap Trick, and they already really liked us, and so...
Is that the biggest name band you played with? Was there any others that maybe you were a little bit starstruck when you met them?
We played with so many bands. We opened so many bands. Goo Goo Dolls.
Wow.
Bare Naked Ladies. Sheryl Crow. Solo Sound. Trip Shakespeare. Gear Daddies. I mean, everyone in town, Teen and the B-Side, would play with them a lot. We were a great opening band because we were punctual. We were nice guys. We were nice people.
You were reliable too, right? People could count on you if they're going to put you on the slate.
Crap out of people. So, we had fun.
The thing that I always like to know is, you know, who of those big bands were like the nicest, the kindest folks that you encountered?
Bare Naked Ladies is my guess.
They were very nice, but you know, we didn't really, a lot of times you don't really hang with the big band.
Sure.
Goo Goo Dolls were nice. They actually acknowledged us, but I got to say it's Cheap Trick because we went on so many shows with them. We were just this little van following their big bus, but we won over the tech team. So their guitar techs, they're like, these guys are freaking good. This is a good band. So they started watching us, and then they told the band about it. The band started kind of like, actually, well, they play so many shows. They don't look at their opening bands. They come on when they're supposed to play. But I know that they liked us because at the end of this little tour, they played First Avenue, and we played O'Garris the same night.
Wow.
So we didn't open for that show, but we just wrapped up, and they were going from Minneapolis to Chicago the next day. So we just put it out there, said, you know, we're playing O'Garris. You want to stop by and get on stage with us? And just to throw it out there for the hell of it, they showed up.
No kidding.
And I'm telling you, that probably was my greatest moment of my whole career, playing this great show. We were so tight. We were so great after that tour because we watched these guys that are such pros. Wow. Just seeing how they do it, it just sort of inspired me to like, okay, just to do it a pro level, just a couple different things you do on stage and just how you enact with the audience. We already had it down, but I just refined a lot of things watching them for a month of shows.
And they showed up.
So I was, one moment I look back, I was looking at my band or my drummer. I look forward and I see Robin Zander and Tom Peterson and I think Bunny. I don't know. There was 3 of them. I don't think Rick was there in the bar. He was hanging out with somebody, but Robin Zander's watching us play.
Wow.
And then we're like, you want to get up and play a song? He got up and played a song with us. We played a Stone song or something, but awesome. I've got photos, but this is before the cell phones were really big.
Right.
So we don't have a lot of footage of it, but there's lots, a few photos of it. And one of my most proud moments, he's playing my guitar, he's singing in my mic, and we played some great songs.
And clearly you have to, you got to be a good guy to be willing to do something like that. That some, you know, I mean, O'Gara's was a nice venue, but to them, a rinky dink.
Right.
You know, I think space. We related with them. We were a hardworking band. I have a story. You asked me to bring up some stories.
Bring a story, yes.
Okay, just a couple. Again, we're a Minnesota nice band playing all around the country. We played coast to coast. We played at CBGB's. We played at the Whiskey.
Really?
Yeah. To nobody, John. I mean, no one was there, but we did play the CBGB's two different times. But it's a hard thing. But we would anchor our bar shows where you'd open for some band for $50 and you'd play at a college show for more to help sustain the tour. Anyway, so a lot of college NACA shows. We were in Des Moines. We had a good little crowd in Des Moines that we had built over the years. They still come out to the dugout, some of those Des Moines people, once a year. So we get that happening. We played at a private party for one of their houses one time. Really good people. We played at this bar in Des Moines, early 2000s. And, the band, the Outfield.
Watched. Oh, Play Deep.
Really? Yeah. So, you know them. They had a million hits in the 80s.
Sure.
Great band. They played at the Taste of Des Moines, right? Right before that.
Oh, yeah.
They came in, walked into the bar, and you could just tell as we're playing, they looked like somebody. They looked like they had a couple girls with them. It was just like you'd expect. But it wasn't a very full night. They asked the bar to ask us if they could get up and play a song. So it was a little like you normally, like with Robin Zander, we asked them to get up because we acknowledged it.
Right.
We didn't know who they were, but they said they want to get up and play a song. We're like, at the break, we're like, okay. Because we're Minnesota nice guys, they get up, they played for a full set.
Oh, no.
They didn't play a song. They played a full set. They just played a huge show. They were going to a bar after, and they were like, oh, we still want to play. Can you guys let us play a song?
Huh. Sure.
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 They play a whole set.
They played like 8 songs or something.
Oh my God.
And they killed our crowd. The crowd that we had that they brought in left with them.
Oh no.
And so we ended up kind of doing a lot of trying to cover their songs we entertained our sound man doing my version of making up lyrics to their tunes. But that's a very Minnesota nice kind
of very Minnesota nice.
We did it. We were nice guys. This is another kind of a weird story, but we are in a place called Okoboji, Iowa.
Oh yeah.
It's a resort city in Iowa. Everybody goes there in the summer because it's the one lake in Iowa. It's a huge thing. We used to play at a place called Fritz Murphy's. Anyway, we were loading into our hotel the night right before we go to the bar. We saw these high school looking kids in a hotel room next to us. This is dodgy little hotel that we stayed at. And they were like, hey, you guys a band or something? Were you guys playing at Murphy's? Yeah. And they're like, oh man, cool. I guess you're going to be over there. I'm always promoting. You coming out? No, we're not 21. Oh, okay. Well, you know, what are you guys going to do? I don't know. So we played our whole show, came back, loading in our guitars into the room, and there's still these sad looking dudes hanging out. You know, they had some like beer and they were like, you know, they just had like a lame night. And me being the constant performer, I felt like I owed these guys. I still had excitement going. And like, I felt like I got to make
What can
this.
I do for I, these yeah, guys?
I don't know why I felt like this, but I got to make something fun for these guys. I go, hey, you know what? I had an idea. I go, you guys, I'll be right back. I'm going to go to the store. I'm going to get something. I'm going to come back. We're going to have a contest. They're like, what? Because it looked like the saddest party. They're just like,
night had gone the wrong way.
Yeah. So I went and got some dumb convenience store prizes like Army Men and like candy bars and stuff. And I said, all right, everybody, come on out here. We're going to have a standing broad jump contest. The winner gets an amazing prize. They're like, what? And it was so stupid. But all of a sudden, they all kind of got excited and like, what's going on? The band guys who want us to do something? What? We got outside and we had a contest. We had it boiled down to the last three and the ones that did the best got prizes. And like, it was like one of the funnest things we did. I don't remember the show. I remember that. And I think everyone felt the same. We were like arm in arm, you know, like this is super fun.
They probably still remember the night too.
I kind of hope they do.
Which is the point.
And ladies and gentlemen, that's Steve Brown. That is Steve Brown. Steve Brown is the guy that if he saw somebody in the lunchroom sitting by themselves, he'd be the guy that would
sit down and chat with them,
up next to him and make a friend.
Probably trying to promote my band.
Oh, for sure. I mean,
even so, that person had a better lunch because of that time. And that's kind of the whole idea.
Well, okay. I have one more story. This is not band related. This kind of brings it all back, John. 1984.
Yes.
I just started high school.
Yes.
From my little St. Jude's experience to a big, huge school. I walk in and I don't really know the scenario of what was going on, but there was some kind of mocking of freshmen and they were in the wrong spot and someone was pointing someone out and somebody hanging around this group. And a young John Schweitz looks at me.
Come on.
This is the first time I met you. This is,
whoa.
A young John Schweitz looks at me and goes, hey, he goes, who are you? I go, I'm Steve Brown. He goes, oh, you Dan Brown's brother? I go, yeah. He goes, all right, come here. I'll show you. Here's what you got to do. You know, like leave him alone or what it wasn't like a fight, but they were just really
giving you a hard time,
guiding all of us and yep. kind of mocking us as freshmen. You, John, are one of the first people I had met that was not from my grade. And you embodied that idea that you're talking about right
come
now.
Come on.
And now right he's the quarterback of the Kindness Chronicles. Talk about coming full circle.
And I said to my brother, I go, do you know who John Schweitz is? He goes, yeah. I go, for some reason, he was super nice to me. And I wasn't prepared for anyone to be nice to me.
That's so cool.
And I always remember that. I was like, John Schweitz is one of the first older guys at high school that was kind of guiding me.
Said, took you under the wing, the whole thing.
And it's true. Sincerely, there were guys from your grade, you know, Tony Yoakum and John Shilkin and you. And they're just that class was a great group of guys until you took our senior girls away from us when you were sophomores.
That's suddenly, where we draw the line in the sand.
I was no longer a fan of Steve Brown anymore.
Where it all changed.
That's so nice of you to say.
True story, man.
That's pretty neat.
Well,
good for you, Johnny boy.
Well, now I'm going to have to go redo my makeup.
And yeah, get a little salty discharge coming out of your eye there.
There's a rock star going to be in here, so I put on the guy liner.
The Alice Cooper starter set.
Yes, very nice. Well, Steve, thank you so much for your time.
Thanks, Steve.
Steve is now in the... tell us about what you're doing right now.
So
actually, he's here today working for me at the Masonic.
After I played and traveled in the band and wasted all my 20s and all my friends were gaining a career basis, I have a TV production degree at St. Cloud State, but I really never did much with it. But I love filmmaking. I love all that production aspect of it. I fell backwards into a job at Target as a producer, as a kind of coordinator. And so I've been doing those kind of things for most of my career. And since the pandemic, I ended up spilling out into new territory again. So I've been doing executive producing and helping with video shoots and with technical producing for virtual events. So I'm helping a film crew. I was supposed to be helping, but now you drag me into this. I'm not helping those poor guys. I'm helping do a shoot for you for the Masonic team, a trivia contest shoot. It's super fun.
Yes, we have Kevin and I actually host another podcast called Minnesota Masonic Histories and Mysteries, and Steve is kind of helping us launch that through this trivia contest to kind of build some awareness. So, Steve, thank you much for your time.
Outstanding stuff, man.
Pleasure to see you.
It was a blast. Thank you so much for asking me to do this. I'm proud to do it.
Matamidi guy.
Hill Murray guy.
Hill Murray guy, too.
Yeah.
I know. I mean, that's that. You know what that is? That is a... It's a match made in heaven right there.
I guess so.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
And off we go.